Well, Jason, can I give you a real-time hack that I just Please. Did while you were talking about searching for a Chrome extension?
Okay, perfect. I like an impromptu demo. Here we go.
One of the things that you can do in Claude, because they have these Ooh. Artifacts,
yes.
is you can do this. Can you make me a Chrome extension that opens new tabs to chatgpt.com? And look and what this does. It created the Chrome extension for you. And you can download, you know, you can publish this for others to use. Look at the world we are in, Jason.
Yes. Literally, if the Chrome extension doesn't exist, go ahead and make yes. one.
Isn't that incredible, J-Cal? Come on.
It's nuts.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by Squarespace. Turn your idea into a new website. Go to squarespace.com/twist for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use offer code TWIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. LinkedIn Jobs. A business is only as strong as its people, and every hire matters. Go to linkedin.com/twist to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And Linear. Linear helps product teams focus on what they do best, planning and building great products. Streamline issues, projects, and product roadmaps in a tool your team will actually enjoy using. Get 25% off at linear.app/twist.
All right, everybody, welcome back to This Week in Startups. I'm super excited because after his whirlwind tour, he's raised some money, he's been growing Grok. My boy, Sunny Sandeep Madra is back, and he is here to talk AI, and we're going to do a bunch of demos. How's your hot AI summer going, Sunny? How's the hot AI summer?
Well, hot AI summer's been great. You know, on the personal and company front, you know, we raised around a capital. J-Cal, you know, has a little
slicey
beak in there as well of that one, right? So we went to the market to raise a smaller amount. We raised more than 2x. We raised $640 million.
Wow. Incredible.
We are now fully armed to continue deploying our chips, adding more capacity to our inference services, adding more features and functionality. So we're very excited.
That's awesome.
Hot AI summer is going to translate into, you know,
big 25.
Supernova AI 25.
AI 25 is going to be big. So
we should coin that AI 25. I like that.
AI 25. There you go. I think the interesting thing is there was a lot of fundraising for AI, like, over the last couple of years. Now there seems to be, hey, these language models didn't exactly work out. People spent a lot of money on them, but it seems like consumers, maybe they don't want to pay for it. Microsoft Copilot, some people are like, I'm not getting enough value. I have everybody on the team. I'm paying for ChatGPT-4 Enterprise for the entire team. I don't know if that's $30 a person a month or something. Yeah. I'm trying to get everybody to use it regularly. Tell us what you think of the air gap. Or, you know, that people have been talking yep. about this sort of, before we get into our AI demos, as we do here on the show, what are your thoughts on translating all this spend into product and this criticism that's come up on All In? One of the partners at Sequoia wrote a piece about it of like, how do you get back the, what is it, $30, $40 billion that's been spent on infrastructure here?
So I had a tweet last week. And it really exploded, and which was about kind of watching some of our interns. And, you know, those interns, you know, I would say, I use this phrase, I don't know if I coined it or not, but like they're AI native. And, you know, I've been in and around like software development since 1990. What I've seen with these interns that are AI native is you used to have this career trajectory, which was you go to school, you learn the theory, you come out, you get a junior job. You learn from the senior folks, and basically maybe a few years in, you can start your own company or you can, you know, go on a IC path or manager path.
Yeah.
These interns that are working with us, they're as good as folks of, you know, my age range or whatever you want to call it, or my vintage.
Gen Xers. Yeah, your vintage. Yeah.
No. But these folks are teenagers.
Well, it makes sense. You know, if you're an AI native and all of the knowledge in the world was locked up in silos, and you had to pick a silo, you had to pick a track. I'm going to be a developer, yes. I'm going to be a marketer, I'm going to be in sales. You know, to switch tracks was extremely difficult because it meant getting somebody in an organization to let you switch tracks.
Yep.
And, you know, if you went for your MBA or you went for your medical degree, or if you went for your, you know, marketing communications degree at UCLA, wherever you went, you know, then people wouldn't believe you when you said, oh, I want to make a horizontal shift. I want to try to move laterally inside the organization. You remember how hard that was? Well, now you can just start asking questions in ChatGPT 4.0 or Gemini or Grok, and it will tell you how that works. And you can just start doing the work. So yeah, I do think that's a sea change.
So coming back to the question, which is, you know, what's happened? People aren't seeing the value because the people that are most using this technology are very early on. I think it was best stated by Zuck, who said, you know, in the Meta earnings, I'd rather invest more and then not be late later on. And I think the feeling that they're getting is the technology, and it's not one of those things where people say it's a bubble. It's like the technology is there. There's a 17-year-old kid, you know, sitting on the other side of this office I'm in that distilled an AI model. This is all, you know, enabled by their ability to look through the information, parse it quickly, have a mentor with them there that's 24/7, that's the AI. And so what everyone is missing out on is maybe we're expecting the gains from the folks that are like in stream, but the gains are coming to the younger folks. And I think people that are interns and the people that are looking for jobs right now actually reminds me of, you know, 90, and I want to ask you about this, but like 97, 98, 99, before 2000, the people that were really kind of coming in and jumping in and way ahead of the folks that were already 10 years into their career, the folks that came in at that point really made massive gains. So it's that moment. And I think we're going to see that everywhere.
Yeah, the way I would explain this is, you know, during that time period, and I was going to pull up my, I have the ChatGPT app on my desktop.
Oh,
I don't
know
if you've used the iOS app yet.
I do, yeah.
Yeah,
I
have it, yeah, and, I have it, yeah. I'm only, you know, I've been using it because it's kind of like Spotlight. You hit, instead of Command Spacebar, I think you hit Option Spacebar or Control Spacebar. Yeah. I'll just show you an example. One of the like more refined points, as one example in venture capital, is understanding the difference between DPI and TVPI. TVPI is the total value to paid in capital. DPI is distributions to paid in capital.
Cash in hand.
Yes. And so these are very, these, there are formulas behind this, you know, a bunch of industry words. And, you know, if you're in a meeting and you're too afraid to, you know, sort of ask, you could just ask here, and it gives you such a concise, amazing discussion that you don't have to hunt and peck on the internet, fight through a bunch of ads and pop-ups to get the answer. And here it says, you know, DPI is distributions to paid in capital. Distributions mean cash and stock given to an investor, and paid in capital is how much money they put in. So if you distributed $1 and the person put in a dollar, it's one, right? And if total value to paid in capital is how much did Sunny invest in my venture firm? But what's the total value on paper? Paper return. So I own a bunch of Stripe markup. So let's say I own a bunch of Stripe, and for every dollar that Sunny put in to my fund, we had $10 worth of Stripe. You know, you'd have 10 to 1 of the value of the TVPI, but you'd have zero on the DPI to the paid in capital. And, you know, I was just trying to explain this to somebody. I was like, if everybody in our organization just use ChatGPT all day long to ask these questions, I wouldn't have to answer them and they would be really smart. So what I did was, over the weekend, I like to set up, when I open a new tab, right? When you open a new tab on your computer in Firefox, when I open a new tab, I want to set the new tab to ChatGPT 4. Yep. Yep. Now, Firefox and all the browsers don't let you do this anymore.
Oh.
Because
you could always set your default homepage to whatever you wanted.
You can set your default homepage and hit home, and you hit the home button, it will go there.
But you can't open the tab to that.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Now, why did they do that? Well, because they make so much money when you open the Firefox tab and it gives you stories, and some of them are paid stories and search and all that. So I just, you know, found a stupid, easy to use Chrome extension. I'll show it to you here. And this is the one for Firefox. It's called New Tab Override. And basically, it's just a wanky, you know, little add-on that every time I open a tab in Firefox now, it opens up to ChatGPT 4.0.
Yes.
And then I went to my entire team and I said, starting today, everybody on their work computer, when you open a new tab, I want ChatGPT 4.0 open.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people complain, then how do I do this? And blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't care. Just do it. Because I think once you do 20 questions, queries, searches a day, I think the number's 20, your mind changes and your workflow changes and you become an AI native. All right, founders, we all know you have too much to do. So I'm going to save you time and money, the two things that you value. No matter what you're building, you got to have a website. We all know that. And everybody judges you by your website. People judge a book by its cover. That's what they say. Don't judge a book by its cover. Well, the reason they admonish people with that is because people do judge books by the cover. That's why when you go to the airport, some covers, they fly off the shelves. The good news is that Squarespace can help you, because Squarespace not only will make you a beautiful website, man, they do domain names, and they have all kinds of tools in AI now. They got Blueprint AI. It's a tool that's going to help you tweak your website by answering 5 quick questions. And once you have the design sorted out and it's beautiful, it's stunning, man, they got all these other AI tools that are going to help you with all the copy you need. You're going to save time, save money, and you're going to get that site online and wow your customers. Squarespace is the longest running partner here on This Week in Startups because they love startups. Squarespace.com/twist for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, you go to squarespace.com/twist. You get 10% off your first website or domain purchase, and it's already affordable and it kicks butt. They're awesome. They're constantly adding new features. That's all I have to tell you. I love it. We use it. Squarespace.com/twist. Thank you to the team over there for making great products for startups. So just trust J-Cal. Take your Chrome, preferably use the Brave browser because that's the best one, and just get new tab override and get the Brave browser so you know you're nice and secure and you're all set.
Yeah.
Or ChatGPT-4 become your default, just like a Google search was your default. And man, it changes everything. It changes everything.
Wow.
And then in my settings, you remember we had custom settings in ChatGPT? This is very simple, folks. It's in rocket science. You go to, I'm in corporate, right? It's got my corporate email there. I hit customize ChatGPT. Yep. And what you see is, I don't tell it about me, but I say, I do care about how it responds. And I have 4 instructions. Please always give citations. Always present data in a table. Please use concise, simple language. Fewer words is better than more. That's it. And once you set that up, you know, now you're cooking with oil, because you can see when I did that search before, of the paid in capital and stuff like that, it will start to give you citations. And that just changes everything because it gets rid of the, what do you call those, hallucinations, which at some point we won't even have hallucinations.
Well, Jason, can I give you a real-time hack that I just did while you were talking about searching for a Chrome extension?
Okay.
And this is like an impromptu demo. I just did it while you were there.
Okay, perfect. I like an impromptu demo. Here we go.
One of the things that you can do in Claude, because they have these artifacts.
Yes.
Is you can do this. Can you make me a Chrome extension that opens new tabs to chatgpt.com? And look what this does. It created the Chrome extension for you. And you can download, you know, you can publish this for others to use. Look at the world we're in, Jason.
Yes. Literally, if the Chrome extension doesn't exist, go ahead and make one. It's demented. It's truly demented. So
what kind of world are we in?
I mean, I think it's a world of abundance where everybody will be capable of doing every job. And so when you start to think about that, then it's just a matter of applying yourself and having some self-discipline, getting a good night's sleep, showing up to work on time, putting in effort. But to be honest, like,
imagine Fordham J-Cal had this.
Ooh, man, I would have been off to the races. Yeah. I mean, it's like a secret weapon, you know?
And so one of my issues with extensions is I'm always weary of what else they're doing. Like, so when you go to the store, right? Because you don't know.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, you know, maybe they're just sending my bookmarks or you know, my searches or whatever. Now I know, because this has explained what it is. It's a very, very simple. You can see that it's a simple action that says, when a new tab is created, set the URL to this.
Yeah.
Isn't that incredible, J-Cal? Come on.
It's nuts. It's completely nuts. And, you know, like, anything that's customer service related, I was riding my, you know, have a, on the ranch here, I now have like a lawnmower that you ride and you can like, it's like a non-turning one
kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a Kubota.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Those are popular too. Yeah. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And like, you know, you put this thing on full throttle, it goes 20 miles an hour and rips everything down. And I got like tens and tens of acres here to do. And I like riding around. I put a podcast on and I go for a ride. And I do it. But it was giving me a light indicator. And I just took a picture of the indicator. I said, what's going on? And it was like, oh, this thing has two different gas tanks. The right one's empty. And I was like, what? And I look it up. And sure enough, this tractor that I have, this lawnmower, has on both sides a different gas tank. And I had filled one, but not the other. And the other was giving the alarm. Now, this, I literally was on the tractor. I took out the app. I took a picture of the thing. And I said, what's going on?
Yeah.
I would have had to go to my desktop. I would have, or pinch and zoom on my phone, looking at a PDF file. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. I was done. And then I was flying my drone around the ranch. And I was trying to figure out why my DJI drone was not connecting to the internet. And I didn't have the maps. And I didn't have the manual. I'm like, trying to find the manual. And I just asked it, like, what's going on here? And, you know, sure enough, it was like giving me all the possibilities here. And it's like, oh, your DJI controller typically comes with several cables. You're supposed to connect the connection port to the controller. And I was like, oh, I'm trying to connect this thing by Wi-Fi. I'm trying to connect to the network. And it's like, no, dummy. You plug it into your phone and it makes the connection over your phone and does it that way. You know, again, like stupid stuff, but man, it figures stuff out on a very, you know, very fast basis because it's got every piece of knowledge in its, you know, language model. So when it's trying to construct an answer, it's not visiting one website. It's got, you know, 500 websites that have addressed this issue and it's synthesized them in some way to give you the right results. So customer support, I mean, the idea of talking to a human, unless that human was the expert, AI is going to do a much better job. So here we are. I wanted to ask you a question. You know, I'm so addicted to ChatGPT 4.0.
Yeah.
Do you think Claude and Llama and Grok, where are those in terms of, you know, queries? Because I don't have time to put the query on all four. And I was using Poe from Quora, and it will let you, like, summon the other ones. But it's also complicated. It's like trying to run four different social networks or, you know, there's no posterous example here where you can ask a question to four different things and have it pull the answers together. And it's still slow.
It's still slow. You know, we at, you know, Grok are here to fix that. But putting that aside, let me give you the framework that I use right now. And, you know, subject to change or people can comment and let us know. I like Claude Anthropic when I need it to create an artifact of something. So like in the case that I just showed you, because what you're able to do now on Anthropic is you can have it create something for you, and then you can publish that, and then other people can remix it. So I could have published that Chrome extension that I just created, and then it gets better and better. So it's like, for me, this like Anthropic is more of like a place to kind of build things and let people build off of them. So if you see on the bottom right here, I can publish this, and then you know I can say publish and copy link. And all of a sudden, this is public, and then people can take this and remix it. So if I send this to you, you know, you're off to the races, right? And you can take it, you can edit it, and then I can see what's happened. And so it's very, very kind of like modern GitHub-like.
Multiplayer mode is the killer feature of these. And I know that Claude has projects now where you put PDFs in and you have product knowledge, which reminds me of the Google Notebook feature where you can upload PDFs and then share them. So have you played with the projects thing yet where you have project knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, I've just tried it for the sake of demos, but like I haven't used it in anything in practice, but I can see where the power could be where you put all the documents in or exactly like, you know, I would say you would want to create one of these for the next This Week in Startups or launch event. And you drop all the knowledge in, and then it's kind of everyone is interacting in there. And when something new pops up, and you don't have to go back and say, what did we decide on this? It's all part of the long running session, which I think is super powerful.
Yeah. And, you know, this is where silos are going to make a big deal. I just had Raul from Superhuman on. He's got all of your Gmail, you know, or Outlook. And you can ask questions with AI and you have this like really interesting dialogue. People can go look up that demo. Now you've got Claude and Notion has AI built into it. So people are asking questions of Notion. Then I just got upsold on Slack. There's just too many AI pieces running around and I need to start consolidating and be able to not hack all this together, which leads me to believe like a desktop version of all this would be very interesting.
Founders, I know that you're keeping a close eye on your burn rate. I am too. In today's venture market, every single hire you make has to be perfect, right? You can't make mistakes. You got to keep that runway as long as possible so that you can run more experiments. And you need talented people to run those experiments and figure out how you're going to get product market fit, how you're going to scale your company. And that's why you need to use LinkedIn Jobs. As you know, LinkedIn brings you the candidates that you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn passed the 1 billion member mark. Think about that, 1 billion members. And 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit the other leading job sites. This is a phenomenal statistic. They don't even go to the other job sites. Why? Because they might not be looking. And those are the best hires, but they're hanging out on LinkedIn, doing professional development, checking in on their network, building their network, sharing content, finding leads, all that great stuff. Bottom line, there's amazing hires waiting for your company on LinkedIn and nowhere else. And they have a special deal right now. Post a job for free. What? F-R-E-E. What a great price. LinkedIn.com/twist. That's right. LinkedIn.com/T-W-I-S-T to post your job for free. Terms and conditions, of course, apply.
And Microsoft and Mac OS are in a, you know, really interesting position as operating systems, and Android for that matter, to do this. I saw the Google Pixel 9s came out, and yep, they have like some language model or Android built into it. I don't know the nature of that. But is Apple getting anywhere with the new iOS and the 16 phone? Any buzz around that in the community?
What they've shown with Apple Intelligence, the awesome thing is like you could replicate Apple Intelligence now. We talked about this earlier on in the year where if you create the appropriate Siri shortcuts, it's like Apple Intelligence, right? And so it's sort of all they've done is taken that concept that everyone was talking about and implemented them there, right? Like, help me, yeah, you know, if you're writing a text, you can say, hey, rewrite this for me so it sounds better or more professional or whatever it happens to be. So I think that they're doing the basics, but to go back to your line of questioning on how I think you should think about using the different AIs, I think you should think about it as like the internet in like 97, where there wasn't like, remember there's like 3-4 places you would jump off to at that point. You still would, yes, go to Yahoo. You know, Google wasn't there. So you had like Excite or Ask G, you know, kind of those early browsers. And you had a few jump off points. So to me, if it's like, I need to do like a task, I always try to do that with a like Anthropic, like one of the versions of Claude. Then, you know, and we'll just kind of jump into one of our demos. You know, we have Grok 2 now, Grok with a K, and we'll just do it real time. I really love this Grok because you can just come in here at any time. And I like using the Twitter Grok or X Grok for tell me today's headlines, because naturally their underlying system of record, their data is the most up to date as it can be, right? So what I find is if I want to get like a quick snapshot and not have to cruise, you know, Twitter or Apple News or whatever it is for a bit, I just come in here and I say, tell me today's headlines. And then you can kind of go back and forth on these topics and say,
and you have it in fun mode.
Yeah. I mean, you can turn that off too. It's one and the same thing, right? And so for this, it doesn't do.
It just gets a little goofy. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, we can run this one again if you want to, but you get the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And the images and here, what's very interesting on the Grok, G-R-O-K on X, is that it is letting you make images of public people.
Well.
And it's gotten a little bit wild.
Yeah. We can get into that, Jason, because that's sort of what we're seeing. And, you know, every one of these folks that were building these things were generally holding back on allowing it to build a sort of, images.
Public figures.
And now
so
we're
in. So you go do one, just do one. Let's see if we can make one. Say,
sure.
If you create a new window in the top right there, if you just, because okay, I think on, it's one this chat interface on Grok. And I don't think it has a history there. I didn't see like a history of my stuff. So I don't think you have to worry about showing your history here.
Yeah, it doesn't do spicy stuff.
Oh, okay. So now me make an image of Donald Trump and Kamala Harris.
Having
pizza
hands
together. Well, holding hands, perfect. Holding hands is even better because that would be a little risque or whatever.
Yeah.
For accurate and up-to-date information on the 2024 presidential election, visit vote.gov.
Okay, well, that's nice. And so,
I mean, looks like Trump. It doesn't look like Kamala. It looks like somebody much younger. You know, there you have it. And, you know, you can imagine that this could get even more spicy or inappropriate or dangerous. And like people were putting things in there of like, not of the sexual nature, but they were putting things in there of violence. And it, I was a little bit like, we need some guardrails here, I think.
There's a few things that have popped up. So to show you what's possible now, when you start mixing some of the technologies together. So this is one of the things that emerged. I don't know if you saw this one, Jason.
I didn't. This is interesting. Here we go. It's a video of Trump and Kamala walking down a beach holding hands with the fingers interlaced, looking at each other lovingly. Okay, now they're kissing, and that's an inappropriate kiss there.
Yes, and then now they've had a baby,
and he's rubbing her. And he's got, I noticed his nails have.
And look, now she's had
a baby Trump.
Trump, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's absurd, but I mean, I don't see that as any different than an SNL skit, right? Like SNL could do something like that, right? No, they did do something like that. They did something like that with the leader of Iran for Ahmadinejad, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it was a very famous piece called Iran, So Far Away.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember this one.
No, I don't remember it.
Was next level on SNL. It was like, you know, back in that Andy...
While you're looking it up, Jake, I'll pull up this one that someone made, which is, this is a CCTV footage image of Trump robbing a store while holding a gun.
And, that's not cool. Yeah. I mean, now we're getting dangerous. Yeah, it looks like, looks like Trump on a bender going to get money. Yeah, not good.
This is the problem when there's no guardrails. Now, the issue is you can download these models and not have guardrails yourself. So I guess, you know, the question is where are we on the spectrum of these things, which is, you know, a bit fascinating.
So this was probably this is the best SNL of all time. Digital short. So for people who don't know, I'm going to talk over this. And even though we're the opposite ends of the earth, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad,
this
remember
guy,
him?
Okay. Yes.
He came to the UN. He was the president of Iran. And he just told everybody, like, I'm going to come to New York, but, you know, this thing about gay people. Belong to me like a very hairy Jake Gyllenhaal to me. And he starts, like, mocking him that he's coming to New York to have a gay love affair.
With
Jake Gyllenhaal. And so they basically mock this guy who was coming to New York to be.
Yeah.
And this is the guy from Maroon 5, Adam Levine.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and this is 11 years ago, and Adam Levine was like the number one musician. He ran for the president. We ran together to a tropical island. And it's just like Andy Samberg mocking him for making fun of gay people when he's actually like on the DL in New York.
Yeah.
And there's like this great moment where he's like flirting and it's just so great. And then they put him in a dress, right? So, you know, like putting him in a dress right here, this scene, like for a guy from Iran who is a religious guy who's, you know, that's pretty out there, I think. But it was pretty funny, you know, like for the, you know, New York squad to mock somebody who's homophobic.
But
put him in a red dress. So what's the difference if consumers do it?
Well, like, okay, here's what I'll say. SNL is a known comedy show, right?
Yes.
And
context.
You know, you know everything that's on there is meant to be a joke. They're meant to make fun of people.
Sure.
Don't take it seriously. Even when you watch the news, the weekend update, you don't take it seriously.
You do not think this is news I have to take action on and I'm going to believe it. You think they're going to mock what's happening in the news.
Yeah, like reading the comics and, like that kind of stuff. The problem with X is it has, you know, you meant to take it seriously. And you also don't have to take it seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of, at the end of the day, SNL still is broadcasting through, I guess, FCC regulations and whatnot.
Your point's exactly correct. There's a wide berth for parody and comedy, and X is known for news because it's traditionally had a lot of journalists on it, a lot of breaking news. It is the number one news app in the world, and you know, a lot of citizen journalism. And so there is going to be a big adjustment period here because, number one, rumors spread really fast on social media. Incorrect stuff spreads fast. The more incorrect it is and the more salacious it is, the faster it spreads on any social network, whether it's Reddit, Twitter, or Facebook. And so, yeah, these are our concerns. And I think labeling needs to happen for fake stuff, right?
If you want to build beautiful software products, well, you need a beautiful development platform. But most issue trackers just aren't helpful and they feel like a chore to use. But Linear is different. It's developer first, incredibly fast, beautifully designed, and it's purpose built for how modern product teams work. With Linear, you can streamline bug reporting and task tracking, plan and spec new features, and manage your long-term product roadmap. That's why Linear is the tool of choice for tech companies of all sizes. Half of Y Combinator companies build with Linear, and it powers Cash App, Scale AI, and Vercel. So here's your call to action. See for yourself why product teams love Linear. Visit linear.app/twist to try Linear for free with your team and get 25% off your first year. That's linear.app/twist.
This came up yesterday.
Here we go. And, yeah, this is this is the AI election, isn't it? It's AI election.
It is. And Donald Trump, and I think it got deleted now, but it's in this Guardian article where Donald Trump says, "I accept." But the entire thing was AI generated.
And what it says is here, Taylor wants you to vote for Trump, Swifties for Trump on their t-shirts. None of this is real. Yeah. It's just... And the headline is fake. Everything's fake, according to the reports. And so here we are. I think you have to assume if it's not on the domain name of a credible source or the URL of a credible Twitter account. You should assume
But it's hard to find credible Twitter accounts because I can find a verified Taylor Swift and I may not, you know, maybe her.
The blue check marks becoming democratized has made it harder.
Yeah.
But, you know, you basically, whatever these social networks decide to do, they will eventually have the reputation that they earn. The reputation, you know, of X is going to be, it's a bit of a free for all. It's, you know, freedom of speech first, which means more trolls, more bots, more misinformation, but they can't hold back the truth. So if there is some truth about COVID, you know, being in a lab, you're going to get it first on X. But, you know, or if there is something that has to do with another conspiracy theory, you know, or something that's breaking news, you'll get it there first, but you also have to check your sources. And that, I think consumers are smart. I think they're going to realize they have to check sources over time and multiple sources and triangulate on the truth. But what do you think about labeling AI? You think this is something that should be either self legislated, you know, the industry comes up with their own group like the MPAA did, the movie industry came up with the MPAA ratings. So the government didn't create the ratings, PG-13, R-rated. That was created by the movie industry.
The industry created them. Yep.
The industry self-policed. So what do you think has to happen here? Should there be federal laws, state, local laws? Should they self-police? You know, this is AI, and if you put an AI-generated image up, you have to label it, and if you don't, you can lose your account. What do you think?
I mean, I like the idea of the industry regulating themselves. Like, we've talked about this before, right? Where all this, you know, the government has been trying to regulate, and things are moving so quickly. So I like the general idea of the industry regulating themselves. And I do believe, at least on, you know, some of the Meta properties, they do call it out now. When you upload something, and you upload something and it's AI generated, it will detect it and label it. You know, they'll say this is AI generated.
Yeah. The video game industry wound up doing this themselves as well. Advertising industry does this as well. They have their own guidelines and code of conduct. You know, music industry does it with the parental advisory label, if you remember that. That was an industry-wide thing where they didn't want Tipper Gore, you know, Al Gore's wife, and the government regulating, they came out with, hey, this is parental advisory. There could be some spicy language in that. I think crypto tried to do that. It didn't work because crypto is such the Wild West. But I do think in AI, if you're generating images, it should put a watermark or something at the bottom generated by AI. I don't think that's too much to ask. I would rather see the industry regulate itself than get regulated. So my best advice is if something is AI related, it has a footer and it just says who produced it. Produced by whatever, Grok, Claude, Stable Diffusion version 2.0. It's just like a little line at the bottom. And then if you want to crop it out, you can, but at least by default, it's not cropped out. I think that would be a major plus, you know? There was already some controversy this past week. I don't know if you saw the article in the San Francisco Standard about Ben Horowitz and Felicia Horowitz.
And someone did the MAGA hat.
They switched from the Democratic Party supporting Democrats to supporting Republicans. It's pretty widely known. Ben Horowitz did a podcast with Mark Andreessen about their support of Trump and why they're doing it for very practical reasons around, you know, supporting the technology industry. But they put Ben and Felicia from like a, you know, not a paparazzi photo, but from like a gala photo.
Yeah.
And they just put MAGA hats on them.
Yeah.
And did you know that was an illustration or not? Did you think that was real? Did you get fooled by it? I'm curious.
No, I mean, I didn't take, you know, like obviously I was following everything that's happened, and I don't take people in Silicon Valley that are deciding to report Republicans as folks that are wearing MAGA hats. So immediately, I assumed it was fake.
Mark Andreessen's position was they were lying and they did this to covertly confuse people. And I was like,
you know,
I could see maybe 1 in 20 people or 1 in 10 people maybe glancing at it and thinking it was real, but it didn't look real. But they should have been more explicit, I think. And that's like a perfect example where in the footer, it did say this is an illustration.
Yeah.
But I think it could have been more clear. And, you know, again, you get the reputation you deserve over time. The San Francisco Standard now is going to have a reputation
of
doing those kind of illustrations like Spy Magazine did. So you will assume, like Mad Magazine or SNL, that that's what you're dealing with when you work with that publication. It could be like the National Enquirer, right? Like that it's, you know, they're willing to do stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think maybe we'll just keep segueing through here.
Keep going.
As well, Jason, you know, because it's related to it. And I want to make sure we continue to touch on some interesting demos, which the image generation model that powers Grok with a K is called Flux. And so Flux is made up, it's an open source project, which is really interesting. And it's made up of a bunch of people that came out of Stability AI. And what you can see in this, I just, you know, pulled up, I didn't want to do side by sides, but the folks at Tom's Guide have gone through the work to do Midjourney versus Flux, right? And, you know, they have some great examples here. And you can see they're effectively on par, right?
Okay. So Flux is its own
open
company,
source.
Open source. Midjourney is closed source.
Source, correct.
And is it coming from the same code base in some way, or the same training data? Because these are very similar.
Well, what I would say is almost all of these models, like, you know, we've talked about before for LLMs, where they were, you know, trained on large corpuses of, you know, web data that's available, right?
Yes.
Similarly, there's large corpuses of images that are available for training on. And so once you, you know, figure out, you know, your strategy and you go down the training path, you know, common crawl, we've talked about this on the pod before. That's what most of the LLM folks were using to get data, you know, from all the open internet. Similarly, there's, and even part of, you know, the Common Crawl project, I think they have image databases that they use. And that's why they come out looking similar-esque.
Got it.
The point that I'm trying to make here is that we now, again, have an open source project in Flux that is capable of generating images. And so within Grok, it's not an image model that they created. It's a, they're using Flux as the model underneath it.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it's exactly.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying we're at this position now where these images are getting so close to reality compared to the last, you know, call it 24 months that, you know, if you study them, you can figure it out. But if you glance at them, you will not know it's fake.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's where we're at. Glancing, you'll get fooled. studying 50-50 if you get fooled. You might be able to figure it out if you see fingers or some weird artifacts, but
you know what to look for, and you find that, right? And so and so the big deal this week also was we'll do another kind of real-time demo here too, because we know Jake loves the demos.
Some good demos, yeah.
So the thing that happened this week, I'm going to switch tabs a few times here. So the thing is that people had Flux generating these TED talkers. Like, and this, Jake, you know, if I showed you this, you would not be able to tell me, you know.
Hold on, I can tell you right now. On the left and the right, you know, I have to zoom in here and really get detailed to figure out what's going on here. The one on the right seems a little bit fake, and the one on the left looks real?
No, they're both prompts.
Oh, they're both prompts.
This is the prompt from the left.
Huh?
And this is the prompt from the right. Oh, sorry, I lost the alt tag.
I mean, yeah. So the alt tag, I mean, it's a photo of a beautiful smiling brunette with long, messy hair. Yeah. I mean, the level of detail is incredible now.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we'll do one ourselves so you can see how straightforward it is here. What people were able to do with this is animate these. And so someone took that, aligned it with some sound, and we're going to do a demo of Runway ML V2. And I'm just going to play, let me just rewind this back. And
you're all so kind. Can you believe that I'm not actually real? But then what is real after all?
So.
Yeah, close. I mean, it doesn't, that one I would know. It didn't pass the uncanny valley because the lip for you, sync wasn't tight enough. The voice sounds very real. The image looks very real, but it's not coming together perfectly, but I'd say 85% of the way there. What would you say?
Oh, man. You know, I'm kind of, you know, if you do the work, I think you can definitely fool someone, J. Cal, and that's going to be one of my tests coming up, right?
It's when we get fooled, yeah.
Yeah, it's when you get fooled. So,
well, I mean, something's going to happen. Like, what do you think the chances are before the election, the week before, somebody drops a video of one of the four principals doing something inappropriate and says, look at this. Wow, this person said this word or that slur word or, you know, I don't know, touch somebody inappropriately. Who knows what they've come up with or, you know, I don't know, threw a bottle through a police car window. Like, you could come up with anything. And then would that actually come out in time and not be able to be debunked and actually impact the election? You know, in the way people claim Hillary's emails, you know, being leaked somehow affected, you know, the election. What do you think? Is that possible?
Well, here's what we're going to do, J. Cal. I'm inspired by your
lawnmower.
Yeah, so I did the image of Brad Pitt on a lawnmower.
Right, right. There he is. Yeah, very similar to me. Yeah, that's how I look. Yeah, similar body type.
The slim down and the look now.
J Ranch.
Yeah. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to go to Runway. So Runway ML, as they've done a lot of new things, and they have this new model where you can go from image to video. So I'm going to upload the video that we just created. It's going to get uploaded here. I'm going to select it. I'm going to, you know, put it in the frame a bit here. Let's just do it like that.
And this is runwayml.com. Yes.
Runwayml.com. And I'm not even going to give it a prompt because you generate me 10 seconds. And this has been pretty fast today. So I'm doing it live. I didn't have to do it before.
I wonder if it's going to understand that that's a lawnmower and make it go and drive
around.
Let's
see what it does. Yeah.
Because one of the first steps is understand what's happening in this image, right? So,
and I didn't even
tell me what's in this image.
We could have given it a description. We didn't even do that. Yes. And the reason we're kind of going through this process is just showing how simple this entire process has become. And so, so it's not perfect. Obviously, the wheels are turning. It's a little bit, you know, the parallel
going backwards
is bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, we did it in 10 seconds, J.K.L.
Yeah, I mean, it's a moving image of him driving. It looks
He waves a bit,
but you could have him turn. You could say after 4 seconds turn. So you start thinking about, I was on my YouTube because I like Star Wars and stuff like that. You know, once in a while I'll see a fan film, and the fan films typically will use cutscenes from video games or some found footage, and they'll reuse the same stuff from the original series or the Clone Wars. You know, they'll stitch stuff together and then they'll have like themselves acting in their backyard as Jedi. Yeah. But you could see somebody uploading a picture of Obi-Wan Kenobi and then say, have him open the lightsaber, do this, do that. And it would like start to make it, right? So here we are. Yeah. Creativity is just unlimited. And you said animate this such that the driver is turning in circles. Interesting. Yeah. And we're starting to get to a level of speed that's not absurdly slow. So these are big moments, I think.
Well, remember just like when we started doing these demos, Jake, I couldn't even do these live, right? Because they would take so long.
You
couldn't
do
it live.
You had to do it. Yeah, they would take way too long.
And so like, I don't think it got them turning in circles, but you know, it's a bit better. Maybe. It zooms out a bit.
But it's
at least.
Zooming out, which is incredible. Yeah. And maybe, oh no, he is coming in a circle. It looks like,
A little bit, you know,
Well, what we're seeing is the audio and the still images are really moving quickly. Video is still taking some time, but that makes sense because the video is 30 frames a second, 60 frames a second. So it's that many images, but you know, this is going to become perfect over time. Here we go.
And you don't hear it. See, even in the original image, Cal, some of it's missing and how it's pulled it out and animated that in. Where we're going to is incredible. And I'm just going to see what it does on this hard right turn to see if it gets it right. If not, I'm going to show you something in a second in my next window where someone has created just in the last couple of days here. Let's see if it gets the turn right on this one. No, I'm still not getting the turn right. So I guess we have to wait. I guess we're still good. We're not. Oh, wait. No.
His hand went to the wheel and he is moving around.
Yeah.
So what'll be interesting is over time, is this will become real time. You'll say, okay, have him driving, have him make a left turn, have him turn to the camera and smile. It'll be doing that from voice prompts as you talk, just like as a director. James Cameron might be over the shoulder of a video editor, you know, doing stuff. Or if you were making an invite for working with a graphic designer, you were making an invite for a birthday party, you might say, okay, you add some balloons and they add the balloons. And you're kind of working with the AI in real time to change the image. I think that's where we're going, is real time editing of the stuff. And I'd say maybe we're 24 months away from a crisp real time edit, right?
Yeah. Well, here's
which is really about the silicon or the software to get there. What do you think?
What we're seeing, the convergence of both, right? We're seeing the silicon go faster. Remember, when we started, we couldn't do these. I'd have to do them before, wait in big queues. Now I just did those live, right? In front of us here.
Incredible.
And the quality of them, you know, it's not quite there, but like we're doing it, like we're like, it's not our day job, right? So, and what I will say is I want to show you this one, which I thought was really cool. Someone made a fan video. And, you know, think about like sort of going back to where we started our conversation on capabilities, or if you're looking for a job or you want to do something like that. So imagine you're trying to break into creative at a big design or fashion house. So someone created this video. So let me show it to you.
Okay. So we got a Gucci video. Wow. That is some cyberpunk awesomeness. I like the headphones. They remind me of my Focal Utopias. Incredible. I mean, if you were to shoot this, this would cost, by the way, each model would be thousands of dollars a day. You'd need them for a day or two.
Give us the breakdown. If you needed to make this ad for, you know,
$250,000 to be, you know, for 30 seconds, I'm thinking 10,000 a second. 300 grand
plus. So wow.
I mean, I just think it would be $300,000 for this level, because you have makeup, hair, you have a set, you've got putting the music aside, which this track is a track that's available. It wasn't made by somebody specifically for this, but put the video editing aside as well, because that's not that much money. You need an art director, you need a makeup person, you need three or four, maybe let's say five models, director of lighting. And the set design here is not de minimis. Like, I don't know if you saw all these floral arrangements to do that kind of stuff. Like, each of these shots might take a couple of hours to set up. That's the other thing, is like set design and creating these things. Like, hit play on it again. And I'll just show you how many. Like, there's a couch set up. It's the same couch in that one. Okay, there's that floral arrangements. There's that backdrop. There's, I mean, a liquid melting wall. Yeah. You know, and then there's like four other backgrounds. So each of those would be wallpapered or, you know, like pinned up, you know, on a frame. And then this one with the wallpaper and pouring melting paint over it, like that kind of shit is really hard to do. You might spend a day trying to create that effect.
Or you got to pay someone to do the CGI, or you got to go pay for the CGI.
Yeah, these look like practical effects, not CGI. Yeah. Wouldn't do these in CGI. You would do this all practical. CGI is way too slow and time consuming for this, but on a practical basis, you'd have to build that wall, pour the paint on it, get the camera set up, throw that all away, put another wall, pour the paint on it, take another shot at it, you know, change the lighting or whatever. I think that's like maybe 10 hours of work to get that one shot perfect, 5 to 10 hours of work. And that's, you know, let's say 4 or 5 people. They each have a day rate of a couple of thousand. So that's when this stuff really adds up, you know, and why these kind of commercials, you're wondering like, how is this commercial so expensive? It's like, you know, 4 or 5 people. And I don't think any of the one shots or scenes takes up more than 5 seconds. So in 30 seconds, you got 6, 7 scenes or sets. Yeah. Like you've got a background there, right?
Yeah. Mine's generated with Brock with a K. Yeah.
I do. Okay, fine. You know, that background you have there, if you had to set that up, that's some artist painting the wall, getting the lighting perfect and buying all that stuff. When I first looked at the background, I thought it was real for a second. You know, it took me 3 seconds to just make sure that that's not real. What
I was
going to
do was, I was trying to animate it so they were moving, you know, but that was one of my tests. Yeah. But I mean,
it's funny you mentioned that. There's no reason in Grok right now I couldn't say, you know, give me a Star Wars background with Obi-Wan in it, and it would, you know, be playing it in the background. Or, you know, hey, show me Hoth and then go to Tatooine and then go to Mos Eisley. And it could just make those scenes in the background and know all that context. It could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right, give me another demo. What else you got?
Okay.
In a while.
Last one. We've got a lot queued up, which is awesome. Oh my gosh, but we'll keep doing them, Jacob. Now we're back. So we're back
every
on
every 2 weeks now. We're gonna get on a good cadence.
So here's one I really like. It's kind of what we were talking about before. It's called Avoca. And what they've done is they've specifically created an AI platform for HVAC, plumbing, and electrical businesses. Oh. And the idea is look. The hardest thing for these are usually small businesses. You know, they don't have call centers. They don't have anything like that. They mostly have their, you know, number going to their cell phone or Google Voice. But what it allows them to do is handle all their calls and basically connect into their systems and let them make appointments and do all that kind of stuff. And so this is one where we're starting, you know, when we talk about this AI air gap, it doesn't exist because what's starting to happen is there's a whole segment of society and that can leverage this technology to make their life better. In the same way, the internet helped them get on with web pages and Yelp and Google reviews. Now they can have a bunch of their business outsourced and handled by AI.
Interesting. So much of this, like, yeah, you see there, they're like, wow. So
I'm going to play this one right here, just really quickly. Yeah.
So this is an AI agent. Handling
Thanks
the phone
calling
calls
Nice
go.
Heating and Air, home of the Cozy Club. How can I make your home feel nice today?
Hello.
Hi there. How can I help you today?
Hello. Hi. Yes.
Hey there.
We've been a customer for 4 years, but I don't know if you have still our record. I want to make an appointment for a maintenance. I guess our air conditioning is not cooling that much.
Got it. Let's get you scheduled for
I like the typing
visit.
Sounds. You hear the typing sounds?
Yeah.
Fake
so
typing
I'm
sounds?
Not going to let it play you, but you can see there, obviously the agent is AI and the woman speaking is, you know, has a little bit of an accent, but you can see them working together. And the benefit of this kind of stuff to people working on the ground, you know, hard work in HVAC, electrical, plumbing is going to be incredible. And I'm really excited to see that.
Yeah. We have a very interesting, company in the accelerator right now called MasterTech AI.
Okay.
And so what they're doing is, since you were in the vehicle business, as you know, there are known issues with different models. So here, you know, and there are these technical service bulletins, TSBs. TSB. Yeah. Yep, so that if you're in the industry, you know what a TSB is. Any known issues with rattle noise from roof. And it's like, based on service information, 2022 Ford Escape, yada, yada. So they now are taking all of those TSBs and all other documentation, putting it into their own model. And then they combined it with a VIN scanner. And so now, you know, you scan the VIN on this car, as you can see here.
Yep.
And you're off to the races. And then you know, and now you're a technician. Think about each step in the way to fixing this car that has some noise, right? Engine noise. Well, you know, now you've got your whole series. The person who's running the bays at this garage, let's say they have five bays, three technicians. Think about all the time that's wasted getting these things up and running, figuring out what the parts are, talking to a senior person. Hey, I'm trying to get noise. Where should I start? It's like, oh, start on the engine, then look at this, then go here. You know, you start putting together all this data into a language model, and then imagine you've got, it's a co-pilot for the real world is how to think about it, right? And, you know, they're not charging enough money, but, you know, if you have a small team with less than eight members, $100 per person, you know, what is a mechanic charge per hour now in the Bay Area? Oh, 200 an hour?
Maybe
300
more.
An hour?
I mean, I can't
maybe
even know.
More. Yeah. Probably 300 an hour. And if you're in another part, you know, if you're in Texas where I am in Austin, like maybe it's half that, you know, it's $1.25 or something.
Yeah.
For the cost of 1 hour, $100, $150, you can make your whole team bionic. You're going to save 10 hours a week, 5 hours a week, I think, out of the gate. And then the reinforcement learning is the really interesting part for me. So when I was jamming with them, I said, hey, is it possible to put on a pair of spectacles that have cameras or, you know, wear a headband with cameras on it and start recording?
The Ray-Bans have
like the Ray-Bans, right? Would be one. But if you didn't want to wear the glasses, there are cameras, you know, from DJI, whatever, that mount when you're skiing, or whatever. So you just throw a vest on with the camera. Now I'm working on this stuff and I'm talking and just record everything, you know. So now you got a Honda, a place that does Hondas and Toyotas. You got another place doing Mercedes and BMW. You know how they kind of split these things up.
Yeah.
And they're talking the language model. It's talking back to them, but they're videotaping. Hey, what are you seeing here? What do you think? And
training,
it's like the training data becomes proprietary. Yes.
Or even if they're not talking to it, like you put your master tech, you just wear it for a year. Wow, there's some great ideas in there, right? Just to...
Yeah, so I keep finding these verticalized AI lunatics, and you know, it's three people. So if you're one of those people and you got a crazy idea, come to founder.university, apply.
Yeah.
We might put $25,000 or $125,000 into your idea and be your first investor. We've done $125,000 checks now. Wow. I mean, I'm kind of a lunatic, but I just thought, you know, if I could every fund put in $2.5 million of the fund, $25,000 at a time to get more people to just incorporate their company and become a formal company. If half of those go on to an accelerator and half of those go on to a seed round, you know, we're going to own 2.5% for $25,000 of 25 viable companies that got to their seed round. You know, we just have to hit one to make it work, and we can really help more entrepreneurs pursue these crazy visions.
That's like serious driving entrepreneurship. I mean, like the government should just double you up right off the bat.
At this point,
Small Business Administration or something. It's, you know, it's
but think about your first company. If somebody with, you know, and listen, I'm not like having delusions of grandeur here, but if somebody like me or my team vetted you as one of 100 companies and gave you that $25,000 as your first company, that opens a couple of doors. So we have a company called TaxGPT, and they got into you. I think you met them. It's an AI tax assistant, and they're kind of going crazy. We did the same thing with them. You know, they're a co-pilot. I'll show you this one. And this is my entire life now, is just verticalized, you know, businesses using AI. And so
incredible.
Now they're doing a co-pilot for taxes, and it's really working. We gave them, I think, their first $25,000. Then they went through our accelerator. Now they're in Y Combinator. And you don't need a ton of money to start a company. It's one of the big messages I want to send to people. You know, you get that first $25,000 check, you give it to your lawyers, you set up your servers, whatever it is. Then the $125,000 from us or from Y Combinator or Techstars, whoever you jam with, that could get, you know, two employees, they're kind of ramen for the next 6 months, what we call ramen funding in the industry. Yep. And if it works, great. You know, you spent $150,000 and now you're ready for a seed round. And if it doesn't work and you pack it up and you shut the thing down, it's not the end of the world for anybody involved. Not for you, not for the investors who put in the $150,000. It was run as an experiment. So let's run more experiments is my message to the entrepreneurial community. And if you want to do that, founder.university.
That is, no, and that playbook, in fact, even if you just go through, like you said, your $25,000 and $125,000 in Y Combinator, you may still have a viable cap table where you can break out. You don't even have to go and get Series A funding or anything like that. You can come.
Sometimes that does happen. You could become ramen profitable, you know, where you start making enough money. We call ramen profitable, basically. You make enough money to pay for your apartment and your ramen. You're not getting rich, but you're at break even. What a powerful place to be as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Sonny, it's so great to be back. I miss you. Come to Austin. Let's have some barbecue, play some poker with our boys.
I'm doing it.
And
I'll
be in the Bay. I'm coming to the Bay every couple of weeks. And so when you get the Grok jet, you zip the Grok jet down here, pick me up. We'll do a little back-to-back poker games here and abroad. I love you, brother. Yeah. Everybody go to x.com/Sandeep. And if you are interested, console.grok.com. GROQ.com, not K. GROQ is Sonny. They make that inference hardware that, you know, instead of watching the text get drawn, imagine, boom, it just comes out. Boom, like that. Boom, you get your answer. That's what Grok does. How many developers now?
I think we just crossed 400,000, right? And so.
Wow, 400,000. Here it goes. Look at this. Look at this Grok, GROQ.com. Watch him do this. Tell me a story about unicorns.
That's
it. I mean, it's just demented how fast that is. And that's only possible with the hardware that you make, right? You have to have...
Only possible with our hardware, yes.
Yeah. Yes. And people are buying up this hardware so that consumers have a faster experience. Will that hardware, same hardware, translate into mobile phones eventually? Do you think? Is that the roadmap or it's not, mostly on the back end to present it?
It's mostly on the back end, like, to be honest. It. Yeah, it's all... We've built it for that purpose.
Got it. And some of the customers, are you public about some of the customers of this yet or no?
We're not sharing that just yet, but some of the biggest companies in the world. Yeah.
Makes total sense to me. I slid in a little bet. How much am I up? Am I 10X yet? Where do you put me at? Did I break the 10X? Because, you know, every time I invest one of your companies, I get the 3 to 10X. I'm wondering if this is the one that goes 50X.
Let me try to benchmark. You're somewhere between 5 and 10 for sure. So
okay, that's called a Sonny special. I always hit the 5 to 10X. I love a Sonny special. But I'm looking for a Madra madness on this one.
Yeah.
I'm looking to go 30 to 50. I'm looking for 30 to 50.
Oh my God.
Well, I mean, I just want to see you hit like the red out of the park. So that means you just gotta just 10X where you're at right now.
Right.
Make this a $20, $30 billion company. We're good.
I'm in.
We'll see you all next time this week in startups.com. Bye-bye. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to This Week in Startups. It's time for our next Jam with J.Cal session. What is Jam with J.Cal? It's a very simple process. A founder tells me about their company. Maybe they pitch me or show me the product. And then they tell me, hey, what are their biggest challenges? And we go back and forth. We have a little bit of a dialogue about whatever their biggest challenge is. And this, of course, is brought to you by our friends at .tech Domain Names. The way we do this is you have to have under $2 million in funding. And so it's for early stage startups. Ulama is our first startup and the founder is Tyce Herrmann. And Tyce, I've never heard that name. T-Y-C-E, pronounced T-I-C-E, I think. Tyce.
Yep.
Really interesting name. I've never come across it. And your company is Ulama?
Yes.
And that's U-L-A-M-A. .tech. You got a great .tech domain name. Why don't you show me what you're working on and then just tell me what your biggest challenge is? And maybe explain to us what your product is, who your customer is as you start here so we get a little bit of context before we drop into this demo.
So our software is for architects to analyze their 3D building models for code compliance before they submit their designs to government reviewers for approval. So we like to think of ourselves as Grammarly for architectural 3D building models. We have software that plugs directly into architectural design software, and architects select the location that they're in and the specific codes that they want to use to analyze their 3D building model. They'll go through the sort of two-dimensional drawings of the 3D building model and assess them for specific codes. So that could be building code, it could be accessibility, ADA code, plumbing, fire. The architect can select what they would like to use. And our plugin then runs through their entire 3D model, evaluating all the geometric and parameter relationships within that model. Once that's done, they get both text and visualization of how their model is out of compliance and suggestions on how to make updates to the model to bring it into compliance. And that's broken out by sections of the code and also building elements within the 3D model.
Got it. So an architect is pulling up this floor plan. It looks like a live workspace. And then they put your plugin into their architectural software. What's the architectural software most common one called?
It's called Revit.
Revit. Okay. So you're a plugin for Revit. And then it goes to their designs and then it matches them to the local rules and regulations, the codes. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. We've created a rules engine that will look at their entire 3D model.
Is that using AI to do that? How is it doing it?
We are assessing the 3D model with a multimodal AI model, and we're also creating those rules by parsing the regulatory text with AI models.
Got it. And so what jurisdictions do you work in? In how long have you been doing this product?
We've been working on it about a year, and right now we're just doing codes that are broadly applicable in any municipality. So
got it.
ADA federal policies or sort of vanilla off-the-shelf building codes.
So ADA policies, Americans with Disabilities Act, I believe, yes, is what it stands for. What's an example of that? Is that like the width of a doorway or how bathrooms work? What's an example or the most common example?
Yeah, those are both great examples. A concrete one would be a toilet has to be a certain distance from the nearest sidewall so that someone can reach a grab bar within an easy, comfortable distance.
Got it. And so it's going to check the ADA rules against what an architect made, correct?
That's right.
And do the architects frequently screw this up or do they generally know all these rules and get it right?
They have a decent working understanding of code, but there's so much minutia within code that it's difficult for them to keep track of it all as they're designing. Most architects are doing what's called parametric design. So as they're making changes, other things in the model are changing downstream of that. And so things can get out of sync really quickly.
Got it. And this isn't occurring in real time. You basically upload your floor plans and then you run this against it and then it tells you.
Yeah, this, they don't even have to upload anything. This is within their design software, but they do it on demand. So it's not just constantly pinging them, hey, this is out of compliance.
Right, because that would be what a co-pilot does. A co-pilot is sitting there while a person's working, let's say like Grammarly on your grammar, or a co-pilot like GitHub's while you're writing code. So I'm curious why it doesn't do it while you're working.
Yeah, we talked to hundreds of architects at this point. And a lot of the questioning was early on about how frequently do you want this sort of analysis? And most architects just want to be able to design. You turn on their design brain, and then at certain checkpoints, come in and look at things like code compliance. But they don't want that constantly getting in the way of their design flow.
That makes sense. They're trying to get into a groove. They don't want to have this interrupting them. Tell me, what's the biggest challenge with your business? And it's like seems like a very reasonable idea and a good starting point for a feature, if not a product, like an interesting wedge. What's your biggest challenge? I'm curious.
Yeah. One thing that we're thinking about actually right now is we're launching a smaller version of this product as a standalone offering. It's going to be for sale on the web. It's ready to go live tomorrow once I finish my distribution list. And it's a component of this overall technology for code compliance. It goes through and it identifies all the elements in that 3D building model and then normalizes the attribution and naming. Right now, it's not very standardized, and that makes it hard for architects to do all sorts of other activities. So what we're struggling with thinking through is, how do we use this initial product launch to generate sort of interest and also make this sort of case that, hey, we know how to develop products for our customer base. This isn't our core product and our sort of main value proposition, but you know, we're servicing this sort of customer base. And just sort of like telling a good story around that through this initial product launch.
So are you looking to launch this in the United States, in Germany? Where are you looking to launch this? I'm assuming the United States?
This first product that we're launching can be used internationally because all it's doing is identifying the sort of elements within the building. It's not applying any of the rules yet.
Okay. Well, I know that there are hundreds of thousands of architects between the United States and Europe. Right. And so they already like to spend on software. The software they use costs hundreds of dollars a year to low thousands of dollars a year, I would assume?
Yeah, the software developing for Revit is thousands of dollars a year, and that's just their sort of baseline design software.
Got it. And does that software have an app store for the plugins like Shopify does or
it
Apple does?
Autodesk, the maker of Revit, has an app store. It's not commonly used yet. It doesn't have a lot of traction like an Apple store, but it's gaining momentum.
So, you know, this is always the challenge with these app stores, because if you leverage the app store to try to get customers and you're very successful, you've basically given a roadmap to those platforms to incorporate you into their product. Without knowing Autodesk and how they work, do they historically support a really great developer ecosystem of plugins, or do they have a reputation for, you know, basically stealing those innovations and putting them into their own products?
Less the reputation of just sort of like taking them and acquiring and, you know, embedding them in their own products. They do a lot of acquisitions now. They're, you know, giant company at this point. So a lot of their new development is through acquisitions. And their developer support has been sort of lackluster in the past, but they are really renewing their focus on that. So there's a lot of momentum around the App Store.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, in a lot of these cases, how the App Store features you and your relationship with Autodesk is going to be the key driver. So if you make Salesforce plugins or Shopify plugins, there's usually a developer evangelist, a vice president there. And if you, you know, make nice with them, they might feature you and bring you 10 customers a day. And if you can work that ecosystem, you know, that's going to be incredibly accretive to your business growing. And it also builds a dependency, but that dependency also builds an acquisition path. So, you know, there's good and bad here. The good is they could, you know, really appreciate what you're doing, not have time for it, and you could basically own this little piece of the puzzle for architects. And so, you know, and then you could have a dependency. They could decide to take you off that homepage or promote somebody else or build it themselves. And all of a sudden your business goes to zero, which has happened to people who build plugins, specifically the developer community at Facebook, famously like Zynga, got absolutely demolished over time. And so you can look at those historical precedents. The more you understand your customers, the more you spend time with them, the better off you're going to be. I would try to embed your company into, you know, wherever the most architects are, whether that's a school or, you know, a company that you can say, hey, I know you're going to get a lot of value out of this tool. Can we, you know, have two seats at your office? And we call this the bear hug. You know, if you could find out who is a great customer for you. They've got 50 architects, 25 architects. And you say, hey, to the CEO, some upstart, the founders, would it be possible to get two desks here and hang out? That's another way for you to get closer to the mix, to the people who are using it. So those are my two paths for you. Building the developer community or bonding with the evangelists at that app store, or deeply bonding with you know, an architectural firm, or
doing both.
And, you know, then if, you know, they decide they're going to compete with you, and, you know, it's harder for them to compete with you and kill your company if you've developed that relationship with the evangelist team. They're going to be like, let's keep supporting them. They're only charging $500 a year per architect for this plugin. We're charging $5,000 a year. You know, that seems like a good price, you know. And getting your customers to pay, also critically important at this early stage. If people aren't willing to pay for it and you've put a lot of work into it and it's, you know, reliable software, you know, then that should tell you like maybe this isn't providing enough value. And that's where pricing comes in. So those are my two hopes for you. It seems like you're off to a great start, and I wish you great luck with it. Any other questions for me?
Yeah, I guess maybe if there's anything that you can say about leveraging an early product launch or a second larger product launch, and like how to really like connect those to like this, you know, previous hopefully success when we launch tomorrow to our major and main product that we're launching end of the year.
Great question. I've seen some entrepreneurs set up little WhatsApp groups or Signal groups or iMessage groups or Slack rooms with say 5 or 10 like-minded customers who become their product advisory council. And then you've got 5 or 10 people who get early access to what you're doing and get to influence the product. They're your product advisory council. But then when you do launch, hey, they might tell people about it. So there's probably 50 architects who have YouTube channels. There might be 50 people on Instagram who are active architects. There might be 100 of them on Reddit in, you know, 2 or 3 different subreddits. And if you can just slowly collect 10 people from each of those social networks, tell them what you're building, ask them for feedback, you know, you might have this little group of highly influential people rooting for you. And I think, you know, I call this the slow embers, hot embers kind of marketing. It's not like huge numbers. It's more like really hot coals. You know, you ever have a really hot coal? You take one of those coals and you put your hand up it. Whoa, it's a little bit hot. Now you put 10 of them together and, you know, you're about a foot back and you're like, whoa, I can feel the heat. You know, then you get like 50 of those coals in a barbecue and they all start turning red. You know, now it's like, whoa, I can't get within 3 feet of the barbecue. And when I put that tomahawk on, you know, that tomahawk steak, man, it just lights right up and it's almost too hot. But each one of those is just a coal, one little simple coal. But together, 50 of those coals can burn so bright, so hot, that boom, and it just explodes, right? And it's even too hot. That's really what building this fire is about. So don't forget, each coal is, in your case, a customer, an individual, and you just have to build that relationship. Now, each of those relationships will probably take you about an hour. So it's about 50 hours of work, which you're probably like, wow, I got to push code. I got to do all this stuff. And this is why sometimes people will have an evangelist or a marketing person just slowly build up that group. And I've done it myself. I have, you know, maybe I would host dinners for other angel investors and LPs in our funds as a venture capitalist. And I still have those, you know, little groups of who went to dinner at different locations. I named them in Signal, you know, the name of the place. And, you know, we have a Marks Off Madison group with like 12 people who came to that dinner and they talk to each other once in a while. And I get to have that like one to few relationship. And they might ask me, somebody might ask me a question and we all talk about it. So I like this like one to few kind of concept. And it could be a Zoom call. It could be a WhatsApp group. It could be an email list, whatever the jam is that you want to try. So I really think that will help your launch. Press is nice if there's industry press or a podcast. And podcasts, there must be 100 architectural podcasts, and they probably all get like hundreds to low thousands of people. But going on those and talking about your product and the problem you're trying to solve, people love innovation. And so I would also look at the podcast route, right? And I think in your case, small numbers are good numbers, right? Targeted small numbers is going to be the key because you're not dealing with a consumer product like Uber or Airbnb where you're trying to get 1 billion people to consider using it to get 100 million or 200 million users. You just need 10,000 paying customers and this thing becomes a $10 million a year business. And that's pretty good, you know, as a, you know, a goal for a business like this. But I wish you great luck with it and awesome start.
Thank you. Really appreciate the help.
All right. All right, everybody. If you want to jam with J-Cal and just talk about your business, have it featured here on This Week in Startups, contest is open. We got one more slot. Go to jamwithjcal.tech. That's JAMWITHJCAL.TECH. Jamwithjcal.tech. Get one of those great .tech domain names and we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.